The day you leave your livelihood and there's someone standing next to you with a tear in their eye, you're a lucky man, because buddy, at the end of this road, if there's one person in the world you can say is your friend, that is for life.
I'm going to give you the only thing I got left. I'll give you my spot.
I want the big man. Do you accept it?
My spot?
I want Conan.
Remember me how I look right now.
I want Bagwell.
It would be an honor.
And I want Nick.
Woo!
I'm taking the Four Horsemen.
Come on, Conan.
And I'm taking the NWO.
Be the most pathetic display of all.
And I'm putting them in.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei, you sound very far away. I can't even see you.
Yeah, it's as if our studio's gotten so big, it's spanned a whole city, city mass.
Well, now we have bureaus of our podcast studios, Wei. We have our downtown bureau, and then we have our SCAR bureau, which you occupy. That just came to me.
Very funny.
Anyway, so there you go, Wei. How's Scarborough right now? It's starting to get a little cold, and thus I especially have been very sick, and this has also been affecting you. I hate this weather change.
Yeah. Our heating's been broken over the past couple of days, so I've been sleeping in pretty much a minus 15 degree weather.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and so I'm waiting for Direct Energy to get here to fix this.
To directly give you some energy. Jesus Christ. Like minus 15. Like, you're not kidding.
Yeah, that's what I have, like, a thermostat here.
Oh, and, my God, dude. That is fucking freezing.
Yeah.
That's below freezing.
No, it's not.
Minus 50. Zero is, like, freezing.
Zero is freezing. You said... Oh, sorry. Did I say minus 15? I meant 15.
Oh, okay. Minus 15. I'm like, dude, that's, like, worse than, like, fucking being outside in, like, December.
Sorry, yeah.
I was about to offer you my place here if it was minus 15.
No, that'd be ridiculous.
Well, 15 is still cold, dude. 15 is still, like, I think, like, room temperature is typically what, like 21, 22?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know why I said minus.
Yeah. Sounds more intense here in Canada. Well, I'm glad to know you're not, like, have icicles hanging from your hair or anything like that. That's good to know.
Yeah, I'd probably be dead if I was sleeping in minus 15. Weather.
I would think so. Yeah, I think you would be. So, well, Wei, this week we decided to review WCW Fall Brawl 97. This was, like, the best boring show I've ever watched.
Yeah, well, why do you say it was boring?
It was just, there's something I really don't like about these WCW pay-per-views from the time, and these were, believe me, they're in the glory years of WCW, but it's like, man, their pay-per-views are just... It's just, like, so formulaic. It's like match, 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 Gene Okerlund, match, match, match. I just want some more.
That's what all pay-per-views are.
Nah, I just feel the WWE, it's, I don't know. It just feels like they have more video packages. They have more interviews. It's like, it gets me set for the match. Like, watching this way, I had, for the life of me, I did not know why Mortis and Wrath were fighting the Faces of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just give me some kind of reason here.
Right, it's the video packages that you think make the difference.
So, Wei, we always are curious about your viewing habits of the time. What was your WCW viewing like in September of 1997? This would have been back before, I believe, Nitro was on TSN. I think this would have been our one-hour Nitro recaps we got 6 days later.
I don't think I watched wrestling at this time, so it would have been zero. Would have been completely none.
Way never followed the boom period. For him, it's like once wrestling hit a boom period, that was his checkout time, and then he'd come back when it was a little shittier.
Yeah, I like things when people don't like them. I'm a hipster.
You are. You're like the Rory McDonald of Review Away.
Or is that a non-hipster? I don't know. I don't know what it means. Yeah, I don't know. I just say it didn't really appeal to me at this time. I just kind of fell out of it, as everybody does at some point.
I remember this night. It was I was out. It was my mom's birthday, and we went out with a bunch of my family members, and I remember we were going to miss Fall Brawl. And that's all I remember about this pay-per-view from the time period. It was one where I would not be tuning into my Scramble Vision to find out what happened at Fall Brawl. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this is the first time I've ever seen this event. And we start off with a video of Arn Anderson giving Kurt Hennig his spot in the Horseman. A very well-remembered segment. It was Arn Anderson basically retiring and handing over his spot to Hennig. And then the following week, the NWO did a parody of this, which people in the Horseman were legitimately upset about the way they went about this parody. And there were a lot of ill feelings at the time.
The following week? I thought it was at that very same episode.
I don't know 100% right now. That would be really tough to pull a parody off like an hour after the segment, but maybe it could have been.
Okay, so, yeah, you probably.
Anyway, that was the build up for this. And this was like the key members of the NWO were not part of this main event other than Kevin Nash. We had it was like the main four for War Games here were Kevin Nash, Conan Six, and Buff Bagwell, with Hogan nowhere to be found on this pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. No idea. Why?
Well, Hogan, I think he had something in his contract where there were certain pay-per-views he did not have to work, and he got a big amount of he had a great contract when it came to pay-per-view, but I think there were certain shows like he only had to work X amount of dates a year, and for ones that he figured, I guess, were not going to draw too well, he would remove himself from them, and he'd work the bigger shows. So I guess this was one he didn't feel the need to do. He did it for here. And then there was a funny story because a few months after this, Bret Hart and Ric Flair were going to have a main event match at the sold out event. And again, it was one that, these two aren't going to draw. So Hogan removed himself from there, and the show actually did pretty well without Hogan. And I don't think he missed any shows after that. So we start off, our announcers are Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay. And Mike Tenay was in his usual role of joining them for the complicated matches, which is, I guess, what the first match would have been classified as, with Chris Jericho defending the Cruiserweight title against Eddie Guerrero, or as the Keith said, Way, Harlem Heat.
Yeah, that's right. There's an incorrect key here put up for Eddie.
It was, before he was Latino Heat, he was Harlem Heat here on the pay-per-view. And Mike Tenay talks about Chris Jericho. Coming up, he'll be on his 30th tour of Japan, and he will be challenging Jushin Liger for the J Crown. And Schiavone and Heenan added nothing to that statement. And Eddie goes to the floor. He's stalling. Very technical match between the two at the start. Jericho would wear down his left arm, and then Jericho drops him throat first on the top rope, hits a lion salt for a two count. And then Eddie gets the advantage with a surfboard, wears down Jericho. He's attacking the back. He applies the gory special, which thankfully Tenay was there to explain. Jericho reversed it. Eddie then got crotched on the top rope. And they go back and forth in the ring, and it ends with a uranage from Eddie. Then Jericho comes back with a double powerbomb, seats him on the top rope, and goes for a superplex. But Eddie lands on top, and then Eddie runs to the top, hits a frog splash, and gets the win. 17 minutes and 21 seconds these two got, and Eddie Guerrero is the new Cruiserweight champion. A very good opener to this pay-per-view.
I thought this was an amazing match, perhaps one of the best matches I've seen in recent memory, just on a personal level. Both of these guys, tremendous, and their timing, their technique, everything was perfect. I really thought, as good as Jericho was, even Eddie was just that much better. He was just fantastic here.
Yeah, I thought this was Eddie in late 97. I mean, the next pay-per-view would be that big match he had with Rey Mysterio, the title versus mask match. So he was just phenomenal during this time. Jeff Jarrett is being interviewed by WCWWrestling.com, and what an interview this sounded like it was, Way, including questions like, you're facing Kurt Hennig. Any thoughts on that match? Some really in-depth stuff over at WCWWrestling.com at this time. And then Larry Zbyszko joins the commentary team here. So it's like we had four guys here on the commentary team at one point or another.
And I think Tanay was gone at this point.
Tanay left, but then he came back. At one point, they did have four guys calling a match, which was ridiculous. And we got Harlem Heat with Jacqueline taking on the Steiner Brothers with Ted DiBiase. And this match was way better than I anticipated it to be because everyone just killed everybody in this. There were some fun exchanges between Scotty and Stevie Ray at the start, including a side slam by Stevie and then a belly-to-belly by Scott. Steiner's cleared the ring, and crowd was really into that. We saw a sidekick by Booker, and Scott Steiner took this bump over the top rope to the floor that a man his size should not be taking. And then Jacqueline attempts to hit Scott Steiner and ends up messing that up on the floor. That was the one kind of botch in this match. Then Stevie starts choking Scott with a cord. Zbyszko, in going over stats here, I know we got on JBL here. Zbyszko says that Scott Steiner can bench press 9,000 pounds, and Schiavone completely buys this as legit. 9,000 pounds in a minus 15 degree gym, he could do all this.
Yeah.
Eventually made the hot tag to Rick, hits a top rope bulldog to Stevie Ray, and then hit the Heat Seeker, which was a missile drop kick by Booker T off the top rope to Rick Steiner, who was on the shoulders of Stevie Ray. But the finish comes with Rick going for a German suplex with Scott hitting a lariat at the same time, and Rick pins Stevie Ray at 11 minutes and 42 seconds. So Scott Steiner and Booker T in particular here were bumping big, and I was pleasantly surprised by this match because of those two.
Yeah, this was a good power-based matchup. Crowd loves the Steiners, and they hate Harlem Heat, so, you know, a very good wrestling match.
Schiavone then announced that Mike Tanay is back to, quote, help us with this match. And that would be Alex Wright defending the television title against Ultimo Dragon, which Schiavone would go back and forth between Ultimo and Ultimate Dragon during this match. We got the great crowd shots of every Alex Wright entrance where guys tried to do his armpit dance, which I enjoyed. And Tanay then mentions why the TV title is so important, because it's defended weekly on television. What a concept, Way. Alex Wright is now a heel, and Dragon is now a babyface after he ditched Sonny Ono. And Wright got the heat, did his little dance, and Wright worked for a rear naked choke at one point here. And this is when I noticed we had four guys calling two people in the ring. A little bit too much. And Dragon gets his feet up, hit a sequence of kicks, and then the Asahi moonsault to the floor, which it is named after him, hitting his own maneuver. And then Dragon gets crotched on the top, drop kick to the floor, and then there is a follow-up plancha. Dragon then hit a sunset flip powerbomb off the top for a two count, a moonsault off the top for another two count, and then we saw a top rope Frankensteiner by Dragon, and then he applied the Dragon Sleeper, but Wright makes it to the ropes. Then Wright counters another Dragon Sleeper with a jawbreaker and hits a bridging German, same finish as the tag match, and Alex Wright gets to win. These guys went 18 minutes and 50 seconds, so letting the undercard work.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you had very capable workers at the time on the undercard, so it was a great thing. This was a good match, but I found that the rest spot in the middle, when Alex Wright was just, he put on this rear chin lock for a very, very long time, and it just really zapped the energy from the crowd. And I didn't think they ever quite recovered by the end of it. It was also getting an hour into the card by this point, so this was the third, you know, pretty long match that they had seen. But I thought Ultimo Dragon was just so awesome here. His style was completely unique to North American wrestling at the time. And I just find it interesting to compare this run of his with his WWF run. And, you know,
yeah,
guys like Ultimo, Eddie, and Jericho, they just all seem to have much broader and flashier movesets back in WCW.
I think it helped a number of factors. I think the ring in WCW helped, and it was also just that was the mindset in the WWF that they didn't want guys working cruiserweight style. They wanted them working just like their main guys, and this kind of style was never really embraced in the WWF. But yeah, Dragon was just so phenomenal, and watching him in this match, I'm also shocked that Alex Wright never really went anywhere, because this guy would do like, he was always paired with like really strong workers, and he would do like these matches night in, night out, where they gave him time, And it's like you would think he would have progressed somewhere, but really he's just like a blip in the radar. And outside of Chris Jericho mistaking him for Alex Riley, we've never heard of this guy for years.
I think the gimmick was a killer. I think also his look is a killer. And I don't know.
I love the gimmick. I thought the dance was so great.
Okay, but is this a main event type of thing?
Well, he could have progressed there. I mean,
when was the last time you even heard him cut a promo?
As Berlin, he did. To me, that gimmick killed him more than the Das Wunderkind. When he was Berlin and he was like this neo-Nazi character.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work for him. Okerlund is in the back and makes fun of Tony Schiavone's very slow throw over to him in the back. And the NWO runs past him as he's plugging the hotline. And he has an interview with Arn Anderson on the hotline that we can all call in to find out about, way. After you've spent $30, if you want this interview, pay more. And Okerlund then hears the NWO laughing. He goes to open the door and he finds Kurt Hennig, who's part of the Horseman team, laid out. And this is our big drama, way, for the rest of the show. Would Kurt Hennig be able to wrestle tonight after the NWO attack? From there, Way has no thoughts on this.
No, I have no thoughts. No.
Jeff Jarrett, accompanied by Deborah McMichael, taking on Dean Malenko here. And Deborah was the wife of Steve McMichael, and they were playing this up on television that she was more concerned with Jeff than her own husband. And the winner of this match would receive a U.S. title shot at Halloween Havoc. And Jarrett at first sends Deborah to the back. Match starts with Malenko constantly getting the better of Jarrett. Tries for the Texas Cloverleaf, but Jarrett gets to the ropes. And then Deborah returns to the ring. Malenko and Jarrett crash to the floor, and Malenko recovers, hits a baseball slide to Jarrett. Then Jarrett goes for the figure four, but Malenko counters with an inside cradle for a two count. We see a backslide for a two, and then a swinging neck breaker by Jarrett, and he clips the leg of Malenko, applies the figure four, and he gets the win at 14 minutes and 57 seconds. Unfortunately, his contract would be up before Halloween Havoc, and Jeff Jarrett would never make it to Halloween Havoc and his elusive U.S. title shot.
Mm. I find it funny how somebody needs to beat Dean Malenko in order to face Steve McMichael.
Yes, I guess so. Well, two top contenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Deborah didn't really play much of a factor in the match itself, so I don't know why they did that whole, take her out and then bring her back in thing. But, this was okay. This was a fine match between two young second-generation superstars.
At that time, young. Yeah, and this was right before Jarrett would jump back to WWF about a month later. Then we got Kevin Nash, Buff Bagwell 6, and Conan, who have purchased time on the pay-per-view way to cut a promo on ending the Horsemen tonight, and they mock the Horsemen at the end.
What a waste of money. I couldn't understand most of what they were saying. And these NWO promos, they were clearly done to look rough and improvised at the end. I guess because they're so different, and they were done in black and white, they did seem kind of cool, but watching it years later, they don't say very much. They're not very good.
Yeah, this promo, all we got at the end was a mocking Arn Anderson and Kurt Hennig from the segment on Nitro. Then we got the big tag match way, Wrath and Mortis, accompanied by James Vandenberg, the Sinister Minister, to take on Ming and the Barbarian. And they were brawling back and forth. We saw a back body drop by Ming to Mortis, who then was powerbombed in midair by Barbarian. And Larry gets in the line, that will put the rigor in Mortis. Huh. Barbarian climbs up. Vandenberg crotches him, headbutts Mortis off, and Barbarian jumps off into the foot of Mortis, then takes a big boot by Wrath. Powerbomb, neckbreaker by Mortis, and then we saw kind of a Mortis hit his top rope, kind of a leg drop onto the back of Ming. Ming then later came off with a splash off the top rope. Wrath broke the count. They did just this match went too long. There were too many breakups of near falls, and at the end, Ming got Vandenberg and Mortis with the Tongan death grip, but Wrath came from behind and hit his version of the Uranagi, which was called the death penalty to Ming, and got the win at 12 minutes and 29 seconds. I really like Mortis in this match, but this was too long.
Right, right. I didn't think it was that bad. It was a good big power main match. What I just noticed was basically Mortis playing ragdoll to Mangan Barbarian here as the only guy who could really, you know, who was capable of bumping for these two. Ming, I also felt, was very over. People loved that Tongan death grip. They loved this kind of Hulk-like character.
Okerlund was in the back with Flair, Benoit, and McMichael. Benoit tried his hand at comedy in this promo. It failed miserably. He said, six is just a number. We all know what Buff is all about. And Nash has had so many characters, we don't know what he is.
Yeah, well, could have been worse.
No, I think it was as worse as it could be. And then Flair cut a great promo to end this segment.
Mm-hmm. I love how Flair can go from being completely still to intent and screaming.
Yeah, it's just like snapping his fingers. Mm-hmm. Then we got two more giants. Scott Norton against the Giant. And Norton lifts Giant and drops him throat first onto the top rope. The highlight of this match was Giant being knocked down onto his back and doing a kip-up, grabbing the rope, and then a drop kick during his comeback and chokeslam Norton for the win at 5 minutes and 29 seconds. Maybe the most athletic Big Show match we've ever seen.
Yeah, he was looking very thin and very buff at this point. And that kip-up, you don't see that anymore.
No, that is escaped along with the drop kick. No longer part of his repertoire. Then we got Diamond Dallas Page and Lex Luger taking on Randy Savage and Scott Hall. Zbyszko was hilarious here. He was building up to an eventual match with Scott Hall. And here they're talking about, well, Larry, you might not respect Scott Hall, but you've got to at least give him credit in the ring. And Zbyszko says, Scott Hall is one of the most overrated wrestlers in the business. And he just went off on Scott Hall here. I found it amusing. The crowd got into the match here with DDP on offense and then with Hall, who DDP, he knocked down Hall and then he clocked Savage, who was on the apron. The heels got DDP in their corner, but Page was able to fight out. Hall at one point starts stomping on Luger and sends him in between both rings. Elizabeth then raked the eyes of DDP and Hall ends up knocking out the referee, Mark Curtis. Then Mickey J runs in. He gets attacked by Hall. And this prompts Larry Zbyszko to leave the announce table and walk down to the ring. And the crowd was all behind Zbyszko here. And it was weird because Hall was and Zbyszko are like arguing back and forth for what seemed like forever, waiting for Lex Luger to be ready for this spot. And Luger was just slow as shit here. And finally, Zbyszko shoves Hall and gets schoolboyed by Luger. And then Zbyszko makes the fast count at 10:18. And apparently this was the finish with Zbyszko being the makeshift referee.
Somehow this is official. Yeah, but there was a lot of heat for this. There's a lot of heat.
The crowd was really into this.
Zbyszko leaving the booth. I don't know what type of history Larry Zbyszko has in this part of America, but fans certainly reacted to him like he was a major, major legend.
And that's how they treated him at this time in WCW. He was, this respected broadcaster, this former wrestler, and they built up to this Scott Hall match, and the crowd was definitely into it on this show. Okerlund again plugs the hotline featuring his interview with Arn, and then Michael Buffer runs down the rules of War Games. And thankfully, I've watched War Games in the past to get the basic gist of it because these instructions were so confusing about the different periods, different time limits, a coin toss in the middle of the match. There's a lot to digest.
It's really not that complicated once you see it in action, but to have to explain it to somebody completely fresh, it can be difficult.
So we have our match. It's Kevin Nash, Six, Conan, and Buff Bagwell against Ric Flair, Steve McMichael, Chris Benoit, and Kurt Hennig. And Benoit and Bagwell started off the match. It was a five-minute period for the first two and then 2 minutes for each other entrant. And they would also do a coin toss somewhere here.
I just love the visual of the two cages and the double rings.
Yep.
I think I've always thought of all the WCW concepts, this was the one that I thought the WWE should be employing. It just looks great, and it's a concept that I think is very good and capable of a lot of drama within the match.
And they might do it next year. They're coming out with a War Games DVD. I could foresee them maybe wanting to experiment with it for something, to push a DVD or something. They should. Conan is, first we start off, Shivani is complaining that no one is here to help WCW with Kurt Hennig out. And Benoit gets back body dropped into the cage as the coin toss happens. And Shivani reports that we cannot tell who won the coin toss. All I saw was Conan putting his arms up and jumping up and down. And then 20 seconds later, we can now confirm the New World Order won the coin toss.
Has there ever been a War Games where the baby faces got the advantage?
I don't think so. I think it was. I think they always did it with the heels winning.
Yeah,
for good reason. I know in TNA they would change it around, but I think the heels would always win, and with good reason. So Conan is in next. They double team Benoit until Steve McMichael comes in, and the Horsemen then get the advantage. Sean Waltman then comes in and Benoit attacks him, tosses him around the ring, with the announcers really putting over Benoit here. Ric Flair is next in, gets a very big reaction, and then Nash is the final member of the NWO in. Nash just runs through everyone, and the crowd begins chanting, "We want Sting." And for the final entrant, Hennig does show up, gets into the ring, reveals he is not hurt, and he has handcuffs, and attacks the Horsemen. And Shivani is appalled. He's just disgusted at this beatdown of the Horsemen. Shivani says, "It's my job to watch this, but I can't." And the Horsemen refuse to quit until they drag Flair to the door, and Hennig threatens to slam the door on Flair's head, and this is when Steve McMichael ends it at 19 minutes and 26 seconds, but then Hennig doing the infamous finish involving the Freebirds and the Von Erichs from World Class, smashes the door onto Flair's head, and that's how the show goes off the air, with the NWO prevailing over the Horsemen and leaving them beaten down in Horseman country.
Yeah, I really like this scene at the end. Just the heroes in such great despair. It's something that you really never see today anymore. You know, contrast the finish of this pay-per-view with John Cena and how he typically finishes all his pay-per-views and all the Raws, where he's triumphant over the heels. But at the same time, I don't know exactly what happened after this pay-per-view at Fall Brawl. I don't know if the NWO ever really, or the Horsemen ever really got their revenge on the NWO. Maybe this was the opposite of what we see today, in that the heels were a bit too much, too dominant over the baby faces.
Yeah, the Horsemen never really got that big win back. No one really got that big win over the NWO, which was one of those criticisms of the angle, was that you never had WCW eventually triumph over these guys. But you know, the show was good. A lot of good matches on this show. I just found I was I was just not as invested in this. It was just a lot of the matches, it was just like there was no explanation of why these matches are happening. It was just good wrestling. But overall, I'll still give this one a 6 out of 10, because I can't say there was anything terrible on this show. It was some great wrestling. I would much rather watch this roster for 3 hours every Monday than the current roster we have right now on Raw.
Yeah, this was, by far. Come on, Jericho and Eddie as your opener? How could you beat that? Even Harlem Heat versus the Steiners, that's another, like,
That match shocked me. I was shocked at how good that match was.
Well, it's another match between two very legendary teams. And, you know, Ultimo here was really good. Malenko, a War Games match. I thought that in terms of an in-ring, this was a very good card. I gave it a 7.5.
All right. So now we will head on over to your feedback and see what you guys had to say about Fall Brawl from 97. And we start off with Ferris from Malaysia. "This is the first time I actually watched a WCW pay-per-view circa 97, as I was more interested at the WWE during the time. The Jericho-Guerrero match was a good treat, showcasing their chemistry together in the ring. I marked out at the gory special counter face-first electric chair spot because I had seen it before at WWE Insurrection 2000 during a match between the two. Steiners and Harlem Heat was a typical big man tag match. Alex Wright, Ultimo Dragon was a good match, showcasing why the cruiserweight division of WCW during that time was one of the best in history. Jarrett Malenko was good as it is, and I cannot believe that Jarrett won it clean. Then the pay-per-view deteriorated from there on. Wrath and Mortis against the Faces of Fear match was brutal. I thought Wrath and Mortis were monsters that Power Rangers fought during that time. Giant and Scott Norton was a glorified squash match. The tag match that followed was decent up until the shitty finish, as it made the NWO, in particular Scott Hall, look like a fool and a face at the same time. The main event was probably one of the worst War Games I've seen and pales in comparison with other War Games prior to this one. The ending was a typical backstab angle that was very common during that time for WCW. I still cannot believe that Mongo was a Horseman, second worst only to Paul Roma. I give the show a solid 5 out of 10.
Doug from Burlington. I wasn't even six when this aired, but I found it in parts on YouTube. I grew up a huge WCW fan, so thank you for picking this review. Jericho and Guerrero put on a good opener that WCW was famous for during this time. Steiners and Harlem Heat for the 100th time was typical style these two teams put on. Funny to see how mobile Scott Steiner used to be. Wright versus Dragon was cool for me, as Dragon was one of my favorites at this time. Jericho versus Malenko was a good technical match, although I will never understand why Jared always rolled through Mongo's wife. Rolled with Mongo's wife, but I digress. The tag match afterwards was horrible, as I never liked any of these four. Giant and Norton was what you would expect from anyone going against Giant in the late 90s. He got chokeslam and pinned within 5 minutes. Luger, Page, Hall, and Savage was interesting to me because I enjoyed watching all these guys in my youth. Stupid finish, but that's WCW for you. Main event I actually remember fondly for the build with the NWO parody, which was hilarious, and the heading turn on the Horseman and slamming Flair's head in the door. It sounded sickening. All in all, I enjoyed the show even 15 years later. I give the show a 7 out of 10.
All right, next up is Corey Ferreira. This is one of the stronger shows WCW did back in 97 when they were having their run on top. The undercard, like most WCW shows, is really good. Eddie and Jericho is a really great way to start the show. The television title match is just as good. See how good the mid-card level titles can look if they are given time on a pay-per-view? Jared and Malenko was great as well. I never really ranked Jared as a good worker in this era, but this was a great match. And then again, he's working with Malenko, who somehow was number one on the PWI 500 in 97, which I will never understand. As for War Games, it was a major disappointment. The angle with Hennig turning on the Horseman was done well, but the match is no classic War Games match. I thought the Horseman versus NWO War Games from the year before was a better match than this one. My God, was McMichael a bad wrestler. For a main event, seeing the NWO take on the Horseman, the NWO team is really weak. No Hall, Hogan, but hey, we got Six and Buff Bagwell. Overall, a good show, mainly for the solid undercard.
From Trevor Kardashian. I remember this event perfectly because it was the day I first learned to ride my bike without trainers. My parents ordered the pay-per-view for me that night as a surprise. I was excited to see the NWO battle the Horsemen, but I was even more excited to go biking outside since there was still light out. So I went biking instead, right after the Steiners and Harlem Heat match. That's what we want to hear, not what you thought of these shows, but what you were doing at this time.
Yeah, that's a great story. Chris in Ottawa. Let's see if he can top it. Oh my goodness. I remember seeing the slow motion footage of Flair's head being crushed by the cage door on that week's Nitro and the announce team making it sound like Ric Flair would never be heard from again. Almost weird to think that it wasn't that long after that Flair had a worked heart attack in the ring live on Nitro. Poor Flair. Crazy that this was the culmination of the infamous mocking of Arn Anderson's retirement, which is still remembered today among the lowest of the low moments in wrestling. Great match to kick things off, one that Jericho counts among his favorite matches ever. Funny to see Jericho as a generic babyface. This was the brief period where he hadn't turned heel, but did have his new Pearl Jam ripoff theme replacing his generic babyface theme, both of which brought back some lonely times in junior high where I would memorize his promos and perform them on the school bus for anyone. Anyway, till next time, guys. And that's a good story, too.
That is.
Did you ever memorize promos, Way?
No. I can't say I have. Well, I might have, but I can't say that I've ever done them for people on the school bus.
You ever trying to go and chin check some people?
No, I haven't. Done that. You can finish off, John, with our guys, but let me first go to Steve Sanders from Los Angeles, who says, I recently watched this, and in 97 I was attending WCW events regularly. The NWO's Four Horsemen parody was incredible and ended the legacy of the Horsemen for good, given what happened in the main event here. Jericho and Eddie had a good match. I know Jericho was destined for greatness, but his Puppies and Hugs babyface run was so lame. Better than their clash match a few years prior. The TV title getting like 20 minutes was Alex Wright's finest moment, and WCW seemed desperate to get Alex Wright over as a champion at this time. His title reign, like his Cruiserweight title reign, was forgettable and ended quickly. I love the Mortis and Wrath team and was glad when they went over. Again, WCW seemed ready to push them. But the next night or next week on Nitro, Hall and Nash pretty much squashed them and their push was over. So what was the point of this? They were probably jealous of Wrath's inverted Boston Crab move. WCW's big problem at the time was the undercard just being filler every show. Wright wins a huge match and drops the title less than a month later to Disco Inferno. Jericho's title reign here was about a month. Eddie held the title for a month. No one was given a big push, it seemed, until Booker and Jericho in 98. Gotta run. Brando and I have a date with a couple of twins, and I need a good parking spot. Not a liver spot. Spot like your dog's spot, but my spot.
Oh, this is a tougher one. I do recall one with Brandon and Steve going on this date with a pair of girls, though I don't know if they were twins, and they ended up stealing Steve's car. I don't know if that's what he's referring to. Hmm. Might have stumped me on one here.
All right.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap up the feedback.
Oh, we got one more, John.
Oh, where's the other one?
Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pat from Atlanta. WCW was hot in the fall of 97, and I was a big fan. But in hindsight, WWE was starting to have the better product. The Horsemen weren't used well after this pay-per-view. Their only other highlight was 1 year later when the Horsemen reformed and Ric Flair returned to WCW. The War Games match and the booking of the Horsemen after this event highlights one of WCW's booking problems. Kevin Sullivan and perhaps Eric Bischoff liked to have really strong heels, but the heels were too dominant over the babyfaces. The babyfaces should have had more triumphs over the NWO. I think one of the reasons DDP was so over in 97 was because he consistently looked great against the NWO. The primary example of how his booking hurt WCW was with the booking of Sting. He should have beaten Hogan clean for the championship at Starrcade, giving WCW and the babyfaces their big win. Then Sting should have been the focus of the company in 98. WCW didn't give Sting a clean win at Starrcade, and Sting had to quickly vacate the title. When he finally won the title from Hogan, it was only after Savage interfered. Sting would lose the title. This is a book here of like the whole history of WCW. Back to Fall Brawl. It was pretty good, but not a great show. 7 out of 10. Well, thank you, Pat.
Cool.
A big recap there of a long time period. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your feedback this week to Fall Brawl 97, an event that many people probably never watched or are having a hard time remembering, but one that we have gone back and watched. So some definite good stuff on this show.
Yeah, but, I thought so. I thought especially that opener, which I thought was the best match on the show.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Cool.
So that is going to wrap us up, folks. But, Wei, what are we going to follow this up with next week?
Next week, John, there are a lot of shows that everybody is requesting. And as I look through this massive list here, the Review Away request thread, I see...
It's really growing.
It has really grown. There's no way we can get through all of this. There's just way, way too much. Let me see here. How would you like to do
whatever you want, Wei?
Let's do September 4th, 2000, War Games 2000, Russo's Revenge Match.
Oh, on Jesus.
The September 4th edition of Nitro from 2000.
We're gonna go back and review a WCW 2000 event. Well, that is all right. That is what we will do next week. That should be fun. Always a great time in wrestling history. I'm sure I will yell. Was this when Nitro? No, this was when Nitro was 2 hours. So that's good. All right. Well, next week, September 4th, 2000, War Games.
And the Russo's Revenge Match.
Yeah, I remember the match. I remember it. All right. So that's going to be happening next week. We will be back on Friday with Review and Impact with myself, Wei, and Nate Milton. And of course, The Law Sunday night, midnight Eastern time. We'll be back and you can check out liveaudiowrestling.com. Follow us on Twitter at Law Radio at Wei0937. And, let's go out with some music here, Wei. What could be appropriate here? Somebody
requested that we end the show
with Steinerized.
Yeah. Well, sounds perfect.
All right. Let's end with Steinerized here.